Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
If you're a regular Gone Cold listener, you likely already know about the important and immensely successful work Authorm Incorporated does. And as always, we'll provide a link in this episode's show notes to DNASolves.com, where you can donate to crowdfunding cases or upload your DNA data to the database there so you can help identify Jane and John Doe's, or maybe even help catch a bad guy. But there's another great way to help. Recently, Fort Worth Cold Case Detectives launched the Fort Worth Cold Case Support Group. Unfortunately, funds available for the investigative efforts and DNA testing on cold cases is severely lacking, and the Fort Worth Cold Case Support Group is the best way to help this incredibly dedicated cold case unit, a small group of detectives whose efforts have proven successful. Most notably, of course, with the resolution of the 1974 case of Carla Walker. We will provide information and a link in all our episodes' show notes for the Fort Worth Cold Case Support Group from this point forward. Along with Gone Cold's regular contributions to crowdfunding cases at DNASolves.com, we'll also be making regular donations to the Fort Worth Cold Case Support Group, and if you are able to join us and do the same, we'd appreciate it more than words can express. The Fort Worth Cold Case Unit has already brought justice and peace to the Walker family, Rodney McCoy, and countless locals, and with your donation, you can be a part of the justice that is sure to come. Thanks, y'all. Now, onto the episode.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Just before 1:30 a.m. on Saturday, October 17th, 1981, the phone rang at the Kilgore, Texas home of Kenneth and Catherine Hudgens. Catherine picked up the phone, and on the other line was her daughter-in-law, Phyllis, distraught and frantic.
"Ray's been shot,"
Phyllis told her mother-in-law. Kenneth, Ray's father, quickly dressed, but Catherine couldn't. She was too panicked. She managed to throw on her robe. They hurriedly jumped in their car and sped to their son's home. As they turned onto Texas State Highway 135, Kenneth and Catherine pulled behind a fire truck. The rescue vehicle seemed to be heading to Ray's home, but stopped not far before crossing the cattle guard in the road that led to property where Ray's mobile home sat. Kenneth and Catherine pulled up next to the fire truck and asked who they were looking for, and the firefighter driving told them they must be on the wrong road, since they couldn't see fire or smoke. Because Phyllis had only told Catherine that Ray had been shot, and not that the home was in flames after being firebombed, Catherine and Kenneth thought little of it. They were in a hurry anyway to get to their wounded son. The fire truck turned around and headed back to the station, unable to find a blaze to put out. As they approached Ray and Phyllis's trailer, one of the first things Catherine noticed was that the light in Ray's office, which sat about 10 to 12 feet from the home, was on. Kenneth and Catherine got out of the car, and Phyllis, along with her and Ray's 4-year-old son, who they called Little Ray, came out from behind the detached office. In the yard, not far from the mobile home's porch, laid Clarence Ray Hudgens. He and Phyllis's watchdogs were nowhere in sight, and never were, as the events of that night unfolded. Because of this, Ray, his wife, and his child were taken by surprise. There was no warning that a firebomb was being placed under the mobile home, only when it went off. But by then, it was too late. The trailer caught fire in an instant and began filling up with smoke, the doorbell ringing incessantly. When Ray tried to lead his family out of the flames and smoke, he was shot to death by someone lying in wait. Catherine, in those moments just as they arrived, hoped her boy was still alive. And, she said, when she noticed Ray's pistol about 2 to 3 inches from his hand, she picked it up and fired 2 shots into the air, hoping to alert the fire truck and bring them back to the scene. It was the first and last time Catherine Hudgens ever fired a gun. Immediately upon discovering Ray, Catherine had sent Kenneth to call 911. They waited for authorities to arrive for what seemed like an eternity, and as Catherine tried to get her arm under her boy's head to elevate it, she saw the shot just under Ray's right eye. It did take a while for the cops to arrive, but when both Gregg County Sheriff's deputies and officers with the Kilgore Police Department showed up, they placed Phyllis, Little Ray, Kenneth, and Catherine in Ray's office, telling them not to come out. Oddly, the office was unlocked. But it took even longer for an ambulance to arrive. In fact, Ray's brother and sister, who were called just after Kenneth Hudgens called 911, got to the scene before paramedics arrived, and they came from Bossier City, Louisiana, about an hour drive away. Ray's brother Kenneth Wayne arrived with his spouse from Arlington, Texas, over 2 hours away. It was after the cops got there, but before Ray's body was loaded onto the ambulance to be taken to the morgue. 27-year-old Clarence Ray Hudgens was drawn out of his home and shot 3 times with a shotgun, murdered in cold blood in the middle of the night. It seems incredibly obvious that Ray's assassination was the work of someone who would benefit in some way from his demise. The attack was meticulous, including the firebombing that could have killed Ray, his wife, and their 4-year-old boy, but it didn't, and a contingency plan was then put into effect. Plan B being to fire upon Ray should he make it out of the deadly flames and fatal smoke. Still, Texas Rangers and Gregg County authorities entertained the idea that 2 drifters, Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Elwood Toole, were responsible. But Catherine Hudgens fought against efforts to scapegoat Toole and Lucas, and eventually lawmen backed off that theory. That theory that surely in their hearts, they didn't believe themselves. For 40 years now, Catherine has been collecting evidence and documents that paint a remarkably clear picture of why her son was ambushed and assassinated. In part 1, we discussed the events of the evening prior to Ray Hudgens' murder. It should be noted before we proceed that several names have been changed, as they have never been officially identified as suspects. On Friday, October 16, 1981, Ray's wife Phyllis called Janet, the wife of Ray's business partner, Homer Edwards, to invite the couple to a fish fry at their home. Janet was surprised by Phyllis's invitation because weeks before, Ray Hudgens had bought her husband out of his company after the 2's long tumultuous business partnership had soured to the point of no return. In fact, about 2 weeks before this night, Ray had asked his mother, Catherine, to come work for him. He needed someone he could trust, he told her. Janet told Phyllis that she'd ask Homer if he wanted to go to Ray's for the fish fry and call her back. She did ask her husband, and much to her surprise, Homer said that he'd love to go. It was odd, Janet thought, since her husband and Ray had barely spoken since their business relationship dissolved, but she thought little of it, at least at the time. Anyway, the fish fry went off without a hitch. There were no reports of arguing about business or anything else for that matter. Just a few hours after, however, Clarence Ray Hudgens was murdered. Those of y'all who listen to Gone Cold regularly know that I can't put the Match 3 puzzle game Best Fiends down. It's a year-round thing for me, but I especially lock in during the chaos surrounding the holiday season, which amazingly is already upon us. Best Fiends is a great way to get a break from all the holiday madness. Unlike those other candy-smashing Match 3s, they're all the same. Best Fiends has a storyline, cool bugs and other small creatures you collect, and fun levels that require differing strategies to beat. Hell, even if you're on a plane or driving through a data dead zone on your way to Grandma's, you can play Best Fiends since you can play the game in offline mode. I just passed level 5000, if that tells you anything about my obsession, and since Best Fiends updates with new levels all the time, there's always more. So, if you need something to take you away from all the stress of holiday happenings and planning, download Best Fiends free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Disillusion of a business partnership is hardly the only grounds to suspect that Homer Edwards was involved in killing Ray Hudgens. And perhaps providing some background on the man is necessary before we proceed. Homer Edwards purchased a popular and long-established Mexican restaurant in Kilgore in 1969 from the business's original owner, a place called Albert's Mexican Village. Albert's had been family-owned and was a local hit immediately upon opening its doors in the 1930s. When Homer Edwards heard the original owners were closing up shop to concentrate on selling their Texas-famous hot sauce to grocery stores all over the state, Edwards couldn't pass up buying the place. It was a lucrative business move right away for Edwards, in more ways than one. Less than a year after Edwards purchased Albert's, on March 4, 1970, the restaurant's kitchen caught on fire. Homer told the Kilgore News Herald that the blaze originated from a deep vat fryer. Certainly, this is not unusual, but perhaps the fire beginning at 7:30 a.m., when no one was at the restaurant, is a little fishy. It's unknown what the insurance payout was or how it was used. In 1972, Homer Edwards purchased the local taxi company in Kilgore, and 3 years after that, in September of 1975, Edwards opened up another Albert's Mexican Village location, this time in nearby Longview. The following year, Albert's in Kilgore was burglarized, the thieves making off with a small amount of cash and a little booze. In 1977, Homer Edwards opened Longview Vacuum Center in Longview, of course, hiring 30-year vacuum sales and serviceman Howard Kenneth Hudgens, the father of Clarence Ray Hudgens, to manage. As if two restaurant locations, a taxi business, and vacuum sales and service weren't enough, Edwards also began dabbling in insurance policy sales for a Tyler company and bought into Ray Hudgens' business, Oilfield Blasting and Coating Incorporated. Edwards bought 25% of the shares and the remaining 75% belong to Ray. It appears as though Ray Hudgens and Homer Edwards did just fine as partners for a short period, but as Ray's business grew, so did trouble from the outside, from competitors. In fact, a man Ray used to work for, who we'll call J.R. Jones, was at the top of the heap of troublemakers. In part one of Ray's story, we spoke some about shady characters and illegal business practices associated with the world of oil. We've run into it before on cases we've covered on Gone Cold, such as the mysterious death, or faked death, some believe, of Houston oilman Ed Baker, and the murders of Stephanie and Gary Gillette in Corpus Christi, Texas. Gary and Stephanie's deaths likely had nothing to do with business, at least not directly. Still, Gary Gillette's company, Aquavert Drilling Fluids, had several competitors and a lot of drama, and we ran into plenty of seemingly shady oil-filled types over the course of covering the Gillette double murder. J.R. Jones was Ray Hudgens' former employer, and he fits the description of shady oil-filled type to a T. Jones co-owned a couple oil-filled rig sandblasting and painting companies, the two I know of called the Painting Contractors Company and Kiltech. We'll cut right to the chase with this guy. When he worked for J.R. Jones, Ray Hudgens was sent by the man to pick up a large equipment trailer just outside of Monroe, Louisiana. The request was spur of the moment, and Ray, knowing his boss liked to steal equipment, was leery, but he agreed to do it. As he approached the trailer, Ray saw that the scene was swarming with cops. He drove on without stopping, of course, and from that point on wondered if J.R. Jones had set him up, or if he sent Ray out there so he wouldn't have to take the risk himself. But J.R. Jones always seemed to be one step ahead of the law. According to Catherine Hudgens, Texas Ranger Glenn Elliott told her that every time they'd catch Jones with stolen stuff, he'd have threats made to the property's owners, forcing them to decline pressing charges. Sometimes, to be fair, it's said he'd pay off the victims of his theft, which is at least a bit classier. Still, this type of business practice, stealing equipment, etc., eventually drove Ray Hudgens out. He knew he could do it on his own and do it on the up and up. When he did part ways with J.R. Jones, it appears, his former employer was not happy about it, since Ray was starting up his own thing. Jones is rumored to have been the individual who sent men out in an attempt to blow up Ray Hudgens' equipment at his Bossier City, Louisiana equipment yard near Shreveport. Luckily, as we discussed in episode 1, Ray was tipped off and able to prevent anyone from coming near his stuff. But that's hardly where J.R. Jones' role in this story ends. Sometime in 1980, as best I can tell, Catherine Hudgens' brother, Walter Stevenson, was approached by Texas Ranger Glenn Elliott and Gregg County Deputy Gene Miller. The lawmen wanted Walter to talk to his nephew, Ray Hudgens. Ranger Elliott and Deputy Miller wanted Ray as a kind of an undercover informant, reporting back to them any equipment Ray saw J.R. Jones using or in his possession that was stolen. Jones, it appears, was well known for playing dirty in the oil-filled business. Ray Hudgens agreed to inform the lawmen of anything he saw, and not long after that, he began getting threatening phone calls. Ray, like his mother, was known for refusing to live in fear of anything, but the threats he was receiving worried him enough to approach Catherine and his uncle Walter, the latter of whom received his own death threat from J.R. Jones. They reported the threats to the Gregg County Sheriff's Office, but were told nothing could be done until Jones attempted to make good on them. The calls continued and even spread to include Ray's mother Catherine. As an example, Catherine once picked up the phone to a caller telling her,
"This is the night it will happen."
In February of 1981, around the time Ray received a tip that his equipment yard in Bossier City would be destroyed, an attempt to bomb his things at his Gregg County yard, just outside Kilgore city limits, was made. Though it didn't go off, a gasoline bomb was placed near Ray's 40-foot covered trailer that housed much of his sandblasting equipment, including paint and an industrial compressor. A lot of high-dollar equipment. When this incident was reported to authorities, who came to the scene, nothing happened. Whether it was indifference or a lack of evidence is unknown. The federal agency who should have been called, considering the report involved illegal explosives, the ATF, were never informed or brought in. In fact, the ATF, it seems, should have been called in to investigate Ray's assassination, since it, too, involved explosives. But I've seen no indication that they ever were. Back when Ray Hudgens quit working for J.R. Jones, his brothers, Robert and Ricky, also quit working for the man, as did a young man named Michael Moyer. Not long after he quit, Moyer and another man were severely beaten with axe handles after J.R. Jones sent for them to talk. Exactly 10 days before the ambush assassination of Ray Hudgens, Michael Moyer was electrocuted to death while moving a load of steel beams at a plant in Longview. Though the death was ruled accidental, all the employees working alongside Moyer reported that the machine used to move the steel, as well as the beams themselves, never got closer than 10 feet to the nearby power lines. There is, however, no evidence of foul play in Moyer's death. So it's difficult to confirm the possibility that J.R. Jones's criminal activity concerning his business ever went as far as murder, even as it almost certainly included violence. But because of the death threats he made to Ray Hudgens, his uncle Walter, and mother Catherine, it's difficult to eliminate him as a person of interest in Ray's slaying. A revenge-slash-eliminate-the-competition motive isn't out of the question. A day before J.R. Jones died, in 1986, Catherine Hudgens received a strange and unsettling call.
"One of the people involved in Ray's death is gonna die," the caller said.
Still, the man who recently had a falling out with Ray, the man who Ray bought out of his company just before he was assassinated, perhaps benefited most from his murder. It seems to always come back around to Homer Edwards.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When the phone rang at the home of Janet and Homer Edwards in the early morning hours of October 17, 1981, the caller told them Ray Hudgens had been killed. This call came in at least after 1:30 a.m., and oddly, Janet later told Catherine Hudgens, Homer was already dressed and ready to head to the scene. Ready before the phone even rang. Now, I've held in my own hands the correspondence between Janet Edwards and Catherine Hudgens, and that correspondence strongly indicates that Janet genuinely believed her husband and their son were responsible for killing Ray. Their son, Janet believed, in fact, pulled the trigger. It's likely that there are compounding motivations held by whoever killed Ray that we'll never know. But a court document provided to us by Catherine Hudgens is perhaps the most interesting piece of paper concerning Ray's murder when taken alongside everything else she's collected. It's not evidence, but it provides an outline of possible motives Homer Edwards might have had. Since discussing the specifics of the documents and evidence Catherine let us borrow would likely interfere with any future investigation into Ray's murder, we can't get too detailed about the papers upon papers that back the following up. However, we think y'all get the drift. Keep in mind that Homer Edwards was dressed and ready before he got the call about Ray's murder, and in fact answered the call on the first ring, according to his wife Janet. Also remember, of course, that the two had recently had a major falling out and put an end to their business partnership. Insurance companies often investigate a life insurance policy holder's death, particularly if that death is considered suspicious. In a court document filed on July 14, 1984, by the company who held the life insurance on Clarence Ray Hudgens, at least some of the questions they raised concerning Ray's murder were interesting. Because companies don't like to pay out big claims if they can find a reason not to, extramarital affairs by both Ray and his wife Phyllis are listed as potential motives. If Phyllis was found to have been responsible, of course, the insurance company wouldn't have had to pay her out as beneficiary of one of Ray's policies. But as we know, Phyllis and her four-year-old son, Ray Jr., or Little Ray as he is best known to the family, were both in the mobile home when it was firebombed, and near Ray when he was shot. Since you can easily argue that the murder of Ray Hudgens included the attempted murder of Phyllis and Little Ray, it seems ridiculous to imagine she was in any way involved. What the document filed by the insurance company seems to fully realize is the execution of Ray Hudgens was a planned thing, but their question is by whom? The document cites that there is no evidence Ray was shot and killed as the result of stopping the burglary or the vandalism of his property. Rather, he was shotgunned immediately upon exiting his home. There was no evidence, the document says, that Ray confronted or even saw his murderer. We know that Phyllis certainly did not. The document also details how Ray and Phyllis's watchdogs went missing in the hours before the attack, and that Catherine Hudgens's own investigation into her son's murder concluded that the death was an assassination. Those last two points follow, perhaps, the most interesting detail cited here. Line 15 states, quote, "Certain business associates of Clarence Ray Hudgens had taken out large insurance policies on his life under suspicious circumstances, which could have been a motive for the murder," end quote. This line is referring to none other than Ray's former business partner, Homer Edwards. He and Ray Hudgens's former banker, who had since relocated to Huntsville, reported that Edwards phoned him and asked him to tell the cops he was the one who advised him to take a policy out on Ray. The banker refused, he said, to tell that lie. Homer Edwards is said to have latched onto Ray's wife Phyllis after his murder, and in April of 1982, a lawyer we'll call Leighton Rowdy Watson filed with the court an application to transfer Phyllis's policy payouts to Homer Edwards. According to Catherine Hudgens, Phyllis says she never signed any such thing. Rowdy Watson was apparently known for pulling the old switcheroo on documents. But that's hearsay. Also in 1982, Homer Edwards lost a lawsuit against him, brought by the company he had worked for, Combined Insurance Company. Edwards had been running a fraudulent policy scheme and was ordered to pay back the company a ton of scratch. It was not the last time this man was sued. Catherine Hudgens and Janet Edwards corresponded for years following Ray's murder. In a 1984 letter to Gregg County Sheriff Bobby Weaver, Catherine vented her frustrations about the lack of progress in her son's case, and in particular, her frustrations that neither she nor Janet Edwards had been questioned. Janet, Catherine told Sheriff Weaver, was incredibly upset at the thought of her husband's involvement, but everything she had witnessed led her to believe Homer Edwards and her own son were responsible. Janet, Catherine said, was practically begging to be questioned by police. In this 1984 letter to Gregg County Sheriff Weaver, Catherine also spoke of the department's lack of interest in the evidence and documents she had been collecting, and even the threats she'd been receiving. She wrote this letter and others because Sheriff Weaver wouldn't return her calls, and she found out, wouldn't even write her back. On at least two occasions, Ray Hudgens came home very ill after having a couple drinks at Homer Edwards' house. One time, Ray couldn't use his legs, couldn't walk. He told his mother that he believed he'd been poisoned. Interestingly, in March of 1984, the Homer Edwards home was set afire by assailants unknown. The family just happened to be out visiting nearby family for a very brief period, and when they got back, the house was burning, the hallway of the home doused with some sort of accelerant. Homer Edwards passed away in 2018 at age 78. Catherine Hudgens has collected an immensely impressive amount of evidence supporting her theories about Ray's murder, but no one seems to be listening. At least not the folks with the authority to investigate and close the case. The Hudgens family attempted to enlist the help of famous psychic John Catchings in August of 1993, who was located near Dallas. He was prevented by law enforcement from visiting the scene of Ray's murder, with no explanation ever offered Catherine Hudgens. In September of 1983, when five people were abducted from a Kilgore Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurant and executed in a nearby oil field, Catherine Hudgens investigated that case, not under the theory that it was connected to Ray's, rather under the theory that some of the same players might have been involved. The slangs were being theorized as the work of individuals with strong ties to narcotics trafficking at the time. I'm not convinced the KFC murders are actually solved, especially after going through Catherine's files, but that's a story for another time, perhaps. A guy known around the area as Hitman was among those who called in threats to Catherine, telling her to leave her son's case alone, that investigating the case was getting into his business, the narcotics business. But after he was busted in a major federal drug sting operation, he told Catherine in letters they exchanged when he was in prison that he'd no longer be a threat to her. Even if the hitman hadn't said it, it's unlikely Catherine would have stopped. She and her son are a lot alike. Both refuse to let fear dictate their lives and dictate the outcome of justice. Even after she and Kenneth's home was raided by officers wearing bulletproof vests, their guns drawn, Catherine didn't back down investigating. During that raid, officers told Catherine and Kenneth they were looking for drugs and guns before reading them their rights. They found no drugs, and the only guns there were Kenneth's shotguns and pistol. Oddly, considering why they said they were there, the police took virtually all the files, audio tapes, and evidence Catherine had collected on her son's murder. She listed 175 items total as seized. Her car has been burglarized and stolen. Some files gone forever, but luckily, many remain. She even had help for a time hiding them. Catherine Hudgens has received countless threats to her life. When her husband, Kenneth, became ill and felt he couldn't help protect her, she worked quietly and behind the scenes at his request. But when Kenneth passed away, Never seeing justice for his son, Catherine became loud again. Since Ray's murder, she's written and sent in an incredible number of letters to the various law enforcement agencies that have had a hand in the investigation, even requesting the FBI's assistance, since federal law established by the Hobbs Act seems to apply to Ray's case. It says, quote, "Whoever in any manner obstructs, delays, or affects commerce or the movement of commerce by robbery or extortion or attempts, conspires, or threatens physical violence to a person or property in furtherance of a plan to do anything in violation of this statute shall be fined or imprisoned up to 20 years or both." Since Ray's property in Bossier City, Louisiana was also threatened with destruction on a few occasions, it could be argued, perhaps, that his case is interstate. Ray's case remaining unsolved now for 40 years has left both the Stevenson and Hudgens families desperate for answers. Without them, and without justice, the families cannot move past the grief Ray's murder caused. This is especially true of Catherine Hudgens and Clarence Ray Hudgens, Jr., both of whose lives have been defined by that terrible night in October of 1981. If you have any information about the assassination of Clarence Ray Hudgens, Sr., please contact Gregg County Crime Stoppers at 903-236-7867. We'd like to thank Catherine Hudgens for her contributions to this series. We could not have told Ray's story without Catherine's own investigative files, and those files and Catherine's accounts were used as the main sources for this episode. Some details were also taken from the Kilgore News Herald, the Tyler Morning Telegraph, and the Longview News Journal. You can find Gone Cold on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by using @GoneColdPodcast. We're also now on YouTube, where we hope to bring y'all the podcast in a kind of a different way, coming fairly soon. So go to youtube.com/C/GoneColdPodcast and subscribe. We'd greatly appreciate it if you did. You can support Gone Cold at patreon.com/GoneColdPodcast. Donors at all levels there get the show ad-free, and for just $2.50 a month, you'll have access to episodes featuring stories of mostly solved Texas crimes and the bad actors who perpetrated them, such as the Riverside Village Massacre, Parts 1 and 2, and our episode Doped Up and Ready to Kill, among others. Thanks so much to everyone who supports us there. We could not do this without you, and we appreciate it beyond words. If you like what we're doing here, you can also support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating and short review on iTunes. Reviews on iTunes help make Gone Cold visible to more people, and the more folks who listen to these stories, the greater the likelihood someone will come forward with information. If you have not already, we would immensely appreciate your 5-star rating and review there. Thanks for listening, y'all.